You're listening to Practically Ideal.
You gotta be practically ideal instead of just ideal.
Ready for some podcasting.
Oh, Logan, you got any better, man?
All work and no play.
Welcome to Practically Ideal, the podcast for idealists who like to keep it practical. I'm Logan Bowe, podcasting from Brooklyn, New York. I'm joined again by the one, the only, Bob Caswell in Seattle. How are you, Bob?
Hey, y'all. I'm good.
Today we preview the upcoming Game of Thrones season. We also talk recent movies, and we'll give you the usual dose of pop culture, technology, and whatever else is on our minds. All this week on Practically Ideal. Let's rock. Bob, I didn't mention yet, but I will now. We're joined again by Shannon here in the Brooklyn studios of Practically Ideal, here in her evolving role as TV correspondent, ad hoc, airsats, whatever you want to call it, TV correspondent. Welcome back, Shannon. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are
good. You? Really excited to have you back.
Aw.
Well, have a good week, everyone. Shannon, how was your week?
It was okay. I'm kind of in the winter doldrums, I guess. With the weather.
The mid to late March winter doldrums that shouldn't be wintery.
That shouldn't be wintry because it's spring, technically.
Yeah.
But we have on our hands what we would call a wintry mix today.
Yes. A little bit of snow, a little bit of rain, and an unwalked dog. That's part of the wintry mix in my house.
And a lot of depression. I'm just going to be real. I'm just going to be real with you guys.
Way to bring us down. Did you do anything fun this last week?
I started a new job.
Now, that can sometimes be fun.
Yeah.
Or sometimes not fun, depending on what you traded from.
Yeah.
It is fun. I work with kids in an after-school program, so it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. How about you, Bob? You have a good week?
Yeah, I had some funky weather. Now, today, the depression's over. It's sunny outside, but we had, like, one day this week where it, like, hailed, snowed, and then became sunny all within like 6 hours. It was really bizarre.
Wow, that sounds weird even for Seattle.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Other than that, watched a couple movies, laid low. We talked about it last week. Kind of an average week, but the average in a good way kind of week. I was, it was good. It was fine.
Well, tell me about the movies. Any worth mentioning for the people?
Yeah, I saw Gerard Butler in two different movies. One recently out on DVD called it was so amazing that Chasing Mavericks. So it was a surfer movie based on true events, so it's kind of one of those it's kind of a coming of age story, to be honest. It was about a young kid who had a hard time growing up, and Gerard Butler was kind of a local guy who helped him understand surfing and was his escape, and then he got into surfing and became famous for it and that sort of thing. And so there are things about it that were kind of stereotypical and boring, but then there were things about it that were really nice and fun too. And in stark contrast, the other movie I saw was Olympus Has Fallen. Dun, dun, dun.
Wow. That was on your list, right? That was what you told us you were going to see.
Yeah, that was on my Bob's movie previews list or whatever. And I have to say it delivered. I really enjoyed that one. It was action-packed. It was definitely a throwback to the 90s action movies that you and I used to think were, you know, super edgy.
Remind me. Oh, let me guess. Air Force One?
Yes. Perfect example. Air Force One, The Rock, Con Air. You know, those movies where it's like everything hinges on one person who happens to be in charge of saving humanity for the day or whatever.
And we're young enough that we haven't seen many movies like that, so we think they basically invented when we were seeing those.
Yeah, exactly. And this one was with Gerard Butler, and I thought it was going to be like extra gritty or suspenseful or something, because a lot of the reviewers, so it got mixed reviews, and the people who were giving it the negative side were kind of criticizing it for its realism or realistic nature in terms of people dying from a terrorist attack, because it does have, you know, innocent civilians being killed by terrorists, and, you know, that's problematic, I suppose, but is it really too soon for that? I thought you know, as far as movies go, that that was okay. And it didn't shock me or anything. I was, like, prepared to be shocked. And
yeah, but didn't you watch all the seasons of 24? Seems like you're impervious to that.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe I was well prepared.
That's interesting, though, it would do that. It does seem almost in poor taste these days. But
yeah, but whatever.
But you weren't offended. Okay, cool.
No, I wasn't offended, and I thought it, not that I enjoyed that particular aspect of it, but I thought it fit within the context of the movie just fine, and overall really enjoyed it. It was a good movie. Oh, and it had Aaron Eckhart and Morgan Freeman, and they were doing their joint chiefs of staff sort of thing, with lots of boardroom meetings and, you know, politics, and it was really patriotic, almost overly so, but it was fun.
That's right, Aaron Eckhart. That I forgot about that. My one reason I might actually see it.
Yeah, he's the president.
Oh, he's got the nice square presidential jaw, I suppose.
Exactly.
Well, I saw a movie too, is the main thing I want to bring up. And I loved your movies list from last week, Bob, but I have to admit I went off list and saw a different movie. Spring okay. Breakers.
Ooh, nice.
Written and directed by Harmony Korine. I think that's how you say his name. And anyway, it's about four women who want to go on spring break but don't have money. So they rob at gunpoint, fake gunpoint. They're really squirt guns. They're painted to look like guns. A restaurant. And hijinks ensue, basically, to put it mildly. and along the way, they meet a white gangster slash rapper named Alien, played by a creepy yet charming yet creepy James Franco. So, yeah, it's pretty wild, I gotta say. But not only in the way you might expect, actually.
Yeah.
Has this movie been on your radar, Shannon or Bob?
Yeah, I've read a little bit about it. Aren't the girls there? Several of them are former Disney girls.
And one's a Pretty Little Liar girl.
Oh, Pretty Little Liar girl. Okay. So is that supposed to be, this is like their departure maybe? Are they trying to be edgy?
Well, it's interesting.
Trying to
I
be
imagine
edgy?
If you grew up and you're the right age, I guess you don't have to be a certain age to to fantasize about Disney girls. And now they're going to spring break. Maybe it appeals to certain people.
Sure.
I love the way you said that. It's almost like you wanted to steer clear of something. Like for me, it's like, yes, I know these girls because I've been following their career, even though I'm 10 years older than them. That's not what's really happening.
Well, I was just trying to be inclusive of those kind of people. Right. I didn't really know many of them. The Pretty Little Liars girls are the one I know best, and I don't know if that's actually
I think one of them
better.
One of them was the girl from High School Musical, I think.
Selena Gomez?
She is also a Disney person, I believe.
Oh, but a different one was.
But I think it's a different one. I could look it up.
Yeah, but I've heard that they're from
Isn't Selena Gomez, wasn't she Justin Bieber's boyfriend for a while?
Justin Bieber was her boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah, and she has that song that's like, it's love you like a love song, baby. That, okay, I shouldn't sing. Sorry.
That was her?
I don't know.
Anyway, so all that stuff I think is true. But this movie is, like I say, just completely unexpected. Not anything like you'd expect, no matter what you're expecting, probably. And it's actually awfully ambitious as a feat of movie making. I mean, you sort of see the previews and you think it's just going to be debauchery. And that's about as much as it'll offer. But no, it tries to be a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things it does is it plays with perspective. So it will repeat scenes or dialogues from different points of view until you get the whole context. They seem like they're meaning one thing the first time you see it or hear it. Then you realize the more times it goes through it that it means something completely different.
Hmm.
So, yeah, pretty interesting filmmaking from that aspect. And like I say, just unexpected is the word that comes up when I try to describe it so much. So one of the main things is it starts with these normal-seeming college girls robbing a restaurant. That's pretty unexpected. You don't see that in movies. And then it just goes from there. Maybe my favorite moment of the unexpected is, and this is a small thing that I hope is not really a spoiler. Anyway, but it's when these girls are at Alien's house and they're by the piano and they want him to play something uplifting and sensitive. Mm-hmm. So he breaks out into this expertly played versions of Britney Spears' Every Time. And he sings it and it's just playing this beautiful piano and they all sing along. you know, with this badass gangster playing the piano. it's unexpected and totally funny.
Nice.
And again, that's just a huge theme of the movie. And whatever you think the movie will be, it'll be unexpected. I think I already said that. And I actually recommend it if you can handle intense yet very weird movies.
I think I can. Would you recommend it for the masses or just for me and Shannon?
It's a very particular sort of movie, but I don't know how you would know if you would like this kind of movie until you've seen it. So, yeah, I recommend it just so we know whether or not you like it.
That's good enough reason for me to see it. That sounds like an invitation. I'm excited.
And the creepy yet charming yet creepy James Franco is probably a reason to see it all by itself.
Got it.
But let's talk Game of Thrones a little bit, the reason why we brought Shannon on. Now, on Practically Ideal, we try to help people be up to date on the culture that they need to know. Now, before we get into this too much, I just want to let our listeners know that we're going to geek out pretty hard on Game of Thrones here. So if you don't watch the show or you're not up to date, there's a good chance you're going to want to skip this section and go to the end to mini obsessions. I'll be sure to put time markers on the description so you can follow along and go to the right place. Anyway, where were we?
And now, in my mind, Game of Thrones is pretty important TV knowledge these days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's maybe not right up there with Mad Men and Breaking Bad, but I think it's close. The thing where I'm not quite sure, and I'm hoping you two can give your perspective, I feel like it's almost got just a little bit of, let's say, cultiness to it. I mean, it is like fantasy, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there are some people who just don't watch fantasy as a rule, so they stay away, even though they're mostly up to date on TV. So I was just wondering, where does Game of Thrones rank among TV fans? You know, are most people who are into TV watching it, or is it mostly fantasy nerds? Bob, what do you think?
You know, this it has that going for it, but then it also has kind of the adultness going for it or going against it, depending on who you're talking to. So it's kind of in this weird eclectic category that combines lots of categories together, in the sense that most fantasy out there is pretty safe, you know, like PG-13-ish. Like if you think The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings or that whole genre is very safe. You don't have boobies and bad language and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones totally defies that and is kind of known for its rather adult-based themes in some ways. And so there's that aspect that either attracts or deflects certain people. So I think maybe I'm overemphasizing that point, but I think that just throws a whole wrench into the, you know, where does it stack up in terms of people's importance level of watching it. So, because on the one hand, it almost is more accessible because it's an HBO show that's more theoretically gritty or has more freedom to do things, but on the other hand, it's less accessible because it's an HBO show for all those reasons, and you have to pay extra to get it and that sort of thing.
Shannon, what do you think among people you know who watch TV?
I think it appeals to more people than just a straight fantasy would, for whatever reason. It's fun and funny, and I mean, people are watching it and talking about it, so I think that draws people to it as well. Plus, the books have been out for a while, so anyone who's a fan of the books is excited to watch
the
show.
How popular are these books?
I don't know. That's something that's hard for me to assess because I'm like, everyone reads them. They're amazing.
So when I heard this was coming out on HBO, I looked into it a little bit. And from what I can tell, just looking into a little bit a few years ago, it seems like the people who know his books, these books, really, really love them. He's thought of really well, but it's hard for me to know how many people read them, just that the people who do read them love them.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of people have read them. I mean, personally, I talked to a lot of people that are reading them now. So
yeah,
the show's bringing people.
Unexpected conversation broke out over Thanksgiving here.
Yeah.
about you and another guest who was really into them. And so,
yeah.
All right.
A Song of Ice and Fire is what they're really called, but that doesn't really have a ring to it.
So I have a question for you too.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you know, you're comfortable being in the crowd that reads a book because now it's made popular by a TV show? I have to say, there's a part of me that's like, I will never read these books because it's too late. It's like, oh, now that it's popular because it's a TV show that's popular, let me read these books that are like 1,000 pages each and there's 27 of them or however many. And it just feels like that would never happen from my perspective. But I don't know exactly why.
Well, I'll answer first because my answer is probably less interesting than Shannon's.
Why?
Well, this isn't a hypothetical question for either of us.
No.
I mean, in fact, I think I may have played some small role in your reading them.
Yeah, I borrowed the first one from you.
That's right. Which also sort of means I didn't finish the first one and I was willing to lend it.
You're like, yeah, you can just take that.
Right. But I'm open to it. I just didn't get around to finishing it. So I don't say I would never, but... And in fact, the fact that it was an HBO show actually made me interested in trying to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Just it didn't take for whatever reason.
Got it.
For me, it depends on what it is. Like, I read all of these books really quickly. So I've read them, all the ones that are out now within the past, I don't know, 2 years, I guess it was. And but I'll never read Twilight, for example. I don't feel like I need to do that.
Well, but do you watch Twilight?
No. Also, no.
No and no.
No and no. But I did read, I mean, I read The Hunger Games when I heard about those. Mm. It just depends on what it is. Like, are you going to participate in the zeitgeist or not? I mean, sometimes I just like have to know like what the big deal is, and sometimes, meh.
All right.
I don't have to read Twilight to know what it's about and that it's terrible.
Well, since we're lucky to have Shannon with us, who is a pretty big fan, I have a confession, Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
all right. Lay it
on
me.
That is that I actually have a tendency to get lost among all the characters and storylines.
There's a lot. In the books, there's like an index just so you can refer to it.
That'd be nice. I wonder how you do that on TV.
Well, there is the interactive app. You can like get an app for your phone or tablet and have it mm-hmm. follow you along and stuff. And I hear that's cool. I haven't done it myself, but...
I haven't done that either.
Oh, maybe that's something to try.
I mean, the opening credits have a... I think that's why the opening credits have a map. I mean, that's pretty standard of like a fantasy to include a map so
that's
you know
true.
Where you are.
And that's handy.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we could just sort of go down the list of characters and make sure we're clear on who everyone is. If
all
you
right.
help us with that, Shannon.
Yes.
Okay.
I hope so.
So all I did was go to the Wikipedia entry of list of Game of Thrones characters.
Okay.
And let's go down this and make sure we are on board here. Wait, pause, brackets. Need another glass of wine?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Right. Saw you looking down.
I don't know why you had to pause for that.
Well, maybe I'll keep it in. The first one on the list, Tyrion Lannister,
mm-hmm.
Played by Peter Dinklage.
And is this just season two? We're just
yeah,
from where we left off.
One,
okay,
season two.
Okay,
so far, I mean, he's pretty easy to remember.
Oh yeah,
because he's got that snappy dialogue, mm-hmm. a winning personality, and he's mm-hmm.
He's Peter Dinklage.
An imp. Yeah.
Yes.
And so he's one of the Lannisters, but he's mm-hmm. not. Well, I guess he goes back and forth as far as being in the controlling part of the Lannisters, but he's been sort of like a playboy and not necessarily mm-hmm. plugged in, at least in history. But he led that famous battle at the end of season two
mm-hmm.
and did an okay job.
Battle of the Blackwater. Wow. He's one of my favorite characters in the series, definitely. Sometimes, at least in the... I'm speaking more to the books right now, but it's reflected in the show. In a series, sometimes you can tell sort of where the author... is like hiding. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I feel like the author kind of hides in Tyrion. Like Tyrion is one of the characters who will be, he'll like say what we're thinking. Like he's kind of the one who's like, really?
Yeah. And I think you're right. In the shows too, I mm-hmm. think that Tyrion is really one of the best parts of the show that really makes it more than just watchable into something that's really, really good,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah,
and
he's definitely
think
good.
You can connect to him as a character more so than the extremes. Because he had Ned Stark in season one who was like, you know, the righteous,
mm-hmm. so
holier-than-thou, honorable. Yeah, like he was like, mm-hmm. he was almost too, like a religious leader or something that's like never done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he got killed for it.
He had. Yeah. He was complex
well,
in a different
way,
I guess.
Well, he has done one thing
but,
wrong. He has bastard.
So it's always nice
John
to find
Snow.
A character
oh, that's right.
that's got mm-hmm. that smirk and you know, mischievousness, but is also pretty smart and connected and plugged into what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. So Tyrion Lannister, mm-hmm. I think we're okay.
We know who he is.
Now, what about Catelyn Stark?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, remind me. I just don't know the first name.
Okay. They pronounce it Catelyn.
Thank you.
On the show. So that might be why. She's Ned Stark's wife. Oh, so she's the matriarch of the Stark clan.
And
the widow.
Okay, so I know who she is then. And she's sort of, she's sort of doing her part, because obviously the Starks and Lannisters are at war, as we see. But she's all, what did she do toward the end of the season? She's went to one of
she
her
went,
old...
She went rogue. She effed everything up. She did. Yeah. So her girls are still being held hostage, or well, she thinks they're both being held hostage at King's Landing by the Lannisters, right. Sansa and Arya. Really, they just have Sansa. They're letting her think Arya's there still. She wants them back. And so she goes behind her son, Rob, who's declared himself as King of the North, goes behind his back and releases Jaime Lannister to trade for the girls' lives. And she sends Brienne, the Beauty of Tarth, to return Jaime to the Lannisters at King's Landing.
That is
the
right.
Beauty of Tarth?
That's what they call her. In jest.
That's awesome. Okay.
Poor Brienne. She's tragic.
So Catelyn. Okay. I think so far so good. Now, Cersei Lannister.
The queen. The queen regent.
Queen regent. But she's the mom of Joffrey. Is that her?
Yes. Yep. Okay. She's Joffrey's mother.
And, and she, I guess I don't want to start talking about Joffrey too much, but she, she runs a lot of what goes on down there in that city.
She does. She's an interesting character as well. So she's Tyrion's sister.
Yes.
Tyrion, Jaime, and Cersei. They're the Lannister siblings. And Jaime is this, you know, we'll get to him, I guess. But since he's the son who is the perfect son. Mm-hmm. But Cersei always wanted to sort of be, they're twins. So Cersei's got this like fierceness to her. She's always felt like she hated that she's a woman in some ways, because she feels like she's in many ways more powerful than her brothers. Mm. So she uses what is at her disposal. She's really enjoying being the queen right now. She's really into it.
Yes, she is. Okay, and we know her.
And she's very protective of her children, her sweet, sweet children.
Well, and Joffrey obviously is her ticket to direct power, the influence she can wield over him.
Exactly.
Okay, so next on the list, Daenerys Targaryen.
Yes.
And she's easy for me to remember. She's over in. Across the sea. Mm-hmm. Does that have a name?
The Narrow Sea.
The Narrow Sea. With her dragons. And she is getting ready to come back. That's what she's doing.
So she's the rightful heir to the throne.
Khaleesi.
That's what Jorah Mormont
and you have to
says.
Whisper it.
Like every 5 minutes. Yeah, Khaleesi. At the end of like every sentence. Are you hungry, Khaleesi?
That's right.
I read that just a sidebar, I read that was one of the most popular made-up baby names for last year.
Khaleesi.
Several babies named Khaleesi last
year. So awesome.
All right. And Emilia Clarke, who plays her? And she's
on Broadway right now, or she's getting ready to be.
And so I'm thinking of going to see that for my birthday.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Maybe we should all go.
Yeah, that would be great. She's a great actress, I think.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. So, and she has a claim to the throne because her family had it before the Lannisters did, right?
Yes. So actually the Lannisters, so Cersei's queen, not by marriage. So the Baratheons are actually the ones who took the throne from the Targaryens. So that's Robert, the king who was killed by the boar.
That's right.
So he actually took the Iron Throne from Daenerys' dad, from Daenerys' father, and had everyone in Daenerys' family murdered. She escaped by virtue of some Targaryen loyalists, spirited her and her brother across the Narrow Sea when they were but wee Targaryen children. So Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark are the ones that overthrew Daenerys' father, who was called the Mad King. He was totally bonkers. In his old age and was being a tyrant, basically.
And
this is super helpful. Like I knew most everything you just said, like 90% of it I knew, but just like in isolation, each of those pieces of information. And now you just like did this interwoven. It all makes sense.
Yeah, it is super helpful, and I'm really glad we're doing this, because this is exactly what I need to get the most out of this show.
So Daenerys doesn't know that, though, because she was basically raised by her brother Viserys, who was killed in the last season.
And one creepy dude.
One creepy, creepy dude. Well, the Targaryens, they, So the, if we want to go even further back, the Targaryens have been ruling Westeros, which is where most of the main action takes place, for hundreds and hundreds of years. But they originally came across the they're from across the Narrow Sea.
Oh.
They came across and conquered them. And they've been ruling, they had been ruling for hundreds and hundreds of years. They came across the Narrow Sea because their civilization was destroyed in some sort of unexplained natural disaster they call the Doom of Valyria.
Oh.
And so they, in order, there are very few Targaryens, so they, in order to keep the bloodline pure, they wed brother and sister. So
okay.
That's why Viserys was super creepy towards her, because by right, he should have married her, but he had to sell her to the Dothraki lords for the army.
That's
so
correct.
He was kind of...
Okay. That helps too.
Butthurt about that.
So what did you say? What, you mentioned that there was something she didn't know. So what's the thing that she doesn't know about the throne?
The doom
or her
something?
Father?
Oh, her father. So she feels like her. She's been told her whole life that they're praying for her return to Westeros. You know, that she's, it's because she's the rightful heir and her father was so loved and Robert was a usurper and everyone sees him that way as this evil usurper. But obviously Robert was a well-loved king and people don't really care one way or another. And she doesn't know that her father was so, you know, such a terrible ruler. Something she does
like
not know yet.
It's going to come into play in
the
future.
I think it may.
Well, and I think she doesn't know that she might be a terrible ruler, too. She has kind of this personality through the show where, you know, she's bipolar. Like, half the time she's lovable and she's really concerned. And, and then the other half, she's, like, ruthless and will just kill everything around her.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something that's been interesting in this season to see her. You know, she really is getting to practice ruling and... being a Khaleesi.
And
so.
I have to say, I think she's doing a pretty decent job. I mean, being ruthless is part of being a ruler, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably not perfect, but I think she seems to be getting the hang of it from what I've seen.
And she has managed to gain, you know, the love of her people. She has a small core group of followers,
right.
But they do love her. They keep following her across the desert, so.
Right.
All right. So, moving on, we have Jaime Lannister now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a little bit about him. He's the pretty boy, the one who may not be quite as good as his sister Cersei, but he's a dude, which means he gets more rights. And is he in the line of succession? Because Joffrey cuts him out.
Right. Well, he would never have been at all. So Cersei married Robert.
Right. Okay.
So she just happens to be alive still. So she's really ornamental, but since Joffrey is not of age yet, she is queen regent, so she has
Got
more
it.
power, and she's on the small council.
But
so Jaime is just her brother, also her
next
lover.
Next in line for the Lannisters, who are pretty influential on their own right.
Yes, they are, except, okay, so he was part of the Gold Cloaks, and now he's part of the Gold, he's the commander of the Gold Cloaks, the King's Guard, basically. And you may notice people are calling him Kingslayer a lot.
Yes.
They call him that because he's the one that actually murdered the Mad King.
All right.
But everyone calls him that because he was sworn to protect the Mad King. So it's kind of ironic because everyone hated the Mad King, but since he was sworn to protect him, they see him as
Kingslayer, as
tainted.
The slayer that slays people on behalf of the king, not the person who slays the king.
No, he killed the king. He killed the Mad King. Daenerys' father.
Said,
like, because he slew the king.
Wait, so how long was he so close to the king without slaying? Like, what took him so long if he was the guy who was supposed to protect the king, but then he slayed him?
It was during the rebellion. So Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark, they were in open rebellion. It was during the war.
Oh.
But he killed him,
so
like...
So much backstory.
I know, there's a lot of backstory. There's some cool... at HBO.com, there's some cool, like, animated histories.
Oh.
That are narrated by the cast that are kind of cool to look at.
Wow, Logan, it's like the Living Scriptures, but for Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's like those Bible cartoons, but...
I will go and do...
Are they musical too?
Yes, they are.
They are?
Some of them.
Where can these be found?
Oh, you don't know. You don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
Well, maybe you do. I would love to see what you think of them.
Okay.
Anyway, back to...
We could do a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, moving down the list. Help me with the pronunciation here. Peter Baelish?
Peter.
He's,
yeah,
okay.
He's Peter Baelish.
Littlefinger is what I see here. Now, he's the... is he that eunuch dude? Who's he?
No, Peter's the master of coin. He's the one who's in love with Catelyn Stark.
Oh, he's the one who runs the brothels.
The brothel.
And stuff.
He also runs the brothel. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got
yeah.
Him.
So he grew up with Catelyn Stark in River Run, which is in the south. Mm. She moved to the north when she married Ned. He's been in love with her his whole life, and
Is played by Carcetti from The Wire.
Yes. And he's a slippery dude. He's a slippery dude.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see who he's loyal to, if anyone, mm-hmm. or what he really wants.
Yeah.
But he seems to be good at not pissing people off too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, doesn't even have like a monologue at some point that basically is like, hey, stay in the background and mm-hmm. maneuver appropriately and you'll be better off. He said mm-hmm. it way more eloquently than that and in like, you know, fantasy speak, but I thought it was nice.
But wasn't he instrumental in something big like the bringing Jaime Lannister back?
So he went, he was the one that went to the camp where Robb Stark had stationed his army and convinced Catelyn to do that. And she brought him her husband's head in a box.
Ah, oh yeah.
And that's when she really decided she needed to get her girls back at no matter the costs to the war effort. Really, he's their most valuable hostage. And she just let him go.
Yeah. Okay. Jorah Mormont.
Mm-hmm. That's Khaleesi. That's the guy who's always like, Khaleesi. Oh.
God.
He's been exiled from Westeros for being a slave.
How come he knows so much about that other land? And how come he's tied to Khaleesi?
So he's from Westeros, but he was exiled for being a slaver. He's actually Lord Commander at the Wall, where Jon is, his son. Mm-hmm. So he's from he's from Bear Island, but he was recently exiled by Robert Baratheon for being involved in the slave trade, which is illegal.
How did he hook up with the Targaryens?
So he met up with her when she was first sold to the Dothraki. And so he had sought out Viserys to swear his allegiance to him to help him come back and take the Iron Throne, he'd been kicked out of Westeros by Robert Baratheon.
All right, that's that dude.
But he took a shine to Khaleesi.
Yeah, it's funny to see him in this role, and then
what else is he in?
He was in Downton Abbey season 2.
Oh shit, that was him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it was. That was a
slippery
dude.
And he has a way different
too.
Role.
Yeah, he was oily.
He was oily, just in a different way. Well, no, he's not oily in Game of Thrones. He's actually very likable.
Yeah.
But in Downton Abbey, he's kind of a oily dude.
That newspaper guy.
All right. Yeah. Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, the bastard.
That's right.
The stock bastard.
He seems to be sort of the
pretty boy.
Idealistic, but super naive guy up mm-hmm. among the Watchers. That's how I see him, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like raised, I said, the pretty boy.
He is. Oh, he's so pretty.
I would call. I think a pretty boy, and I think of Jaime Lannister. I don't know.
Oh yeah, sure.
We mean different things by pretty boy.
Like a shiny golden knight, Jaime Lannister is.
Yeah, I feel like a pretty boy knows he's pretty and tries to capitalize on that. That's why I think Jaime Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can see that.
So Jon Snow was born of. So Ned Stark goes off to fight this war with his friend Robert Baratheon to overthrow the Mad King. He had just married Catelyn Stark. She's pregnant. They didn't really know each other before that. And he comes back from the war and he has this baby and he's like, this is my bastard. So
in the first season, it seems like there was some tension, but maybe not tons. They'd kind of gotten over it, but not fully.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Catelyn ever really got over it. I mean, obviously he's like almost a man grown by now, but she sees it as Ned Stark's one flaw, his one dishonorable thing that he did.
And they did send him up to the Wall after all, so it's not like they fully.
Well, he did it on his own. He was like, I don't think he didn't see any place for him in Winterfell. He couldn't inherit anything. He wanted to do something honorable, so he joined on his own.
Come to Robb Stark.
Robb Stark.
He's the new, I feel like I should say, current king of the North. Seems like he could die pretty easily.
They all could. If season one was any indication, I feel like when they killed the wolf on the way down south, that was like their way of telling us, like, look, guys, like anyone could die at any time for no reason. So just get ready for that.
Well, hey, that brings up a question, though, like without giving away details or spoilers or anything, since Shannon, you're the one who's read all the books and seen the show so far, how closely, in terms of deaths and plot lines, how closely aligned is it versus taking artistic liberties and stuff?
It's very loyal to the books as far as the big things like that. Like the only changes that I see are little things that I would, that I, understand why they would change for TV. Like there's so many characters, even more so in the book, that in the show, there are many composite characters, like two people that kind of serve the same role. They just turn them into one person, things like that. But like the major things are very true to the book so far.
Wow. So the deaths that we've had in season one and season two are just like they are in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so Robb Stark, I mean, anything we need to know? He's so,
king in the north.
A decent job as a military mm-hmm. commander.
Yeah, he surprised yeah. everybody.
And I'm forgetting what I'm supposed to think of him as a king, just as a leader. Is he doing okay there or not? Remind me.
He is loved by his men, mostly due to the fact that everyone loved his father, Ned.
Uh-huh.
So far, it seems like if he's lost any respect from them, it's because he's trying super hard to do the right thing all the time.
Well, except for he also did a no-no by...
He did a major no-no, right.
Yeah, he was betrothed, or he was supposed to marry somebody, but then he just fell in love with some other person in like 20 minutes of Googling, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're a thing now, okay.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
That's bad.
You gotta take that shit seriously.
He was supposed to marry a Frey of the Crossing. He gained passage across... the river by offering his hand to a Frey girl that he's never met.
Oh, yeah.
But now he sees this random nurse with frazzly hair, and she's a good person, and and he totally is. He totally married her at the end of the last season. That's one of the last scenes.
Okay. Tywin Lannister.
So he's the Lord of Casterly Rock, Tyrion, Cersei, and Jaime's father.
Oh, and he's the real hard ass in the family, the one who mm-hmm. sort of really rules behind the scenes.
He's a real, real hard ass. He's a really brilliant military mind. Mm-hmm. He was actually the hand of the king, the Mad King.
And now he's hand of Joffrey again, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So these Lannisters, they're really
does a he resent that? Family. It seems like he sort of does, but out of honor, he sort of tones it back because he seems very pragmatic and actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost likable in his ruthlessness. Like I think he's a fascinating character.
There's an integrity to him. Mm-hmm. Like he just does what has to be done, and he doesn't mm-hmm. go overboard necessarily. And he doesn't try to be a dick about it. It's just if it needs to be done, he'll do it.
Yeah, and it's almost like you almost get the sense that he's just doing what needs to be done, you know, to ensure peace. You know, he really encouraged. He really
peace
encourages
with him in charge, but peace.
Yes, peace with him in charge, but yes. They're the richest family in Westeros. There's that phrase,
that's
a Lannister always pays their debts.
That's right, and they make a lot of stuff happen with their money.
And Tyrion's relationship to his father is very interesting because Tyrion is the most like his father out of the three siblings, I think. Like, Tyrion is also very brilliant.
And pragmatic.
Very pragmatic, very capable, and yet Tyrion's father hates him because he's a dwarf, doesn't give him any respect.
Oh, also, So Tywin does hate Tyrion. I feel like Tyrion thinks his dad hates him, but you're saying, he actually does hate him.
He does. or at least for all, you know, he's still a Lannister, but, I mean, Tyrion has this line in the last episode, I just watched it, that, so Jaime became, you know, the head of the King's Guard, Cersei became a queen, and then Tywin put Tyrion in charge of all the drains in Casterly Rock.
But they did make him hand of the king in absentia or whatever that was.
Yeah, in his stead. Well, yeah, which was sort of surprised Tyrion, I think.
Yeah, and he did a decent job, but he wasn't really.
Well, at the end of season two, we find him completely, no credit. They've ousted him from his rooms.
Yeah. And you feel bad for him because he's the most likable guy.
He is. Well, the show. And Cersei and I think Tywin both resent him because, well, he's a dwarf, but also the mother died in childbirth, bearing him into the world.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So I was going to say, because it seems like he's also the prodigal son.
Smarter.
He goes off and does whatever he wants while the rest are doing their duty.
Yeah. He sort of goofs off. I mean, he feels like he's not going to inherit. So that's the other thing. So Jaime's not allowed to inherit Casterly Rock because he's part of the King's Guard. The King's Guard are like the Night's Watch. They can't ever marry and they can't inherit lands. So Tywin was really put off that he did that, but he did it so that he could be close to Cersei because he's fucking her. His sister.
it's all about the incest in this
world. But Tywin still isn't going. Tyrion is not allowed to inherit Casterly Rock either. Tywin doesn't want him to. He's a dwarf.
So they got to find someone.
Yes.
All right. Moving down the list. Arya Stark. She's that spunky little girl who they thought was captured, but she sort of escaped on her own, and mm-hmm. she's making her way in the world.
Yeah, she's the best. She's a lot of fun.
By pretending to be a boy.
Mm-hmm. The polar opposite of her sister, who just wanted to be a princess. And
oh, yeah. And then queen.
And then queen. Arya has a lot of street smarts.
Yeah, there's been a lot of foreshadowing with her, like, sword play expertise and training there, but it really hasn't, at least in the show, hasn't come out. Like, I'm almost waiting for, like, a badass sword fight with a little girl, but it hasn't happened yet.
She's killed a couple people.
Well, that's true. My expectations are way too high. It's like, she's already killed some people.
Yes. And had some people killed by that friend she made.
Yeah. Jaqen H'ghar.
She's pretty ballsy with her requests.
There are there are a lot of theories out there, Game of Thronesian theories, mostly from the books, but because there's a lot of like mystery involved. I mean, there are so many characters, but there are things that come back around like as the books progress. And there are some people that think that her dancing master, the man who's teaching her to sword fight, and then the assassin that she meets later on are actually the same person. Like, they're part of this, like, because they're from this, like, clan in Braavos. They're both from Braavos, so they're both from the same country. Uh-huh. And there's this, like, group of people over there who are assassins that can change their appearance.
Oh.
You did notice when you last see him, he changes his appearance.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
So there's some people that think those two guys are the same, and he's watching over her still.
Interesting. All right.
That's pretty cool.
So, love Arya.
Cool theory.
Then Bran Stark.
Our favorite cripple.
Oh, yeah, he's a cripple.
Jamie crippled him.
I feel like I get annoyed with him a little bit.
No, Bran Stark?
Yeah.
I guess he's trying to be... I don't know what he's trying to be.
He's trying to be the little lord.
Yeah, he is trying to be. I guess he's okay. I can't remember much about him, I guess.
He's magical. He's a warg. He can go into his wolf's body.
Oh, is that what's going on with all of his funky dreams and stuff? Because it hasn't really been explained yet.
No, they haven't explained it very well in the show. It's sort of just he dreams. When he goes to sleep, he's in his wolf's body. So.
And then Sansa Stark, and that's who we were just talking about.
She's betrothed to Joffrey.
Yeah.
Oh, poor thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Joffrey. Because Joffrey's next. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
Well, with Sansa, it's interesting because season one, you kind of rolled your eyes at her, and she was the girl to hate. And then in season two, you feel really bad for her, and all of a sudden you're rooting for her. So you get this really interesting 180, at least I did, in terms of perspective. And I think she's actually a pretty interesting character as well.
Because no one deserves to be betrothed to Joffrey.
No, that's a fate worse than death. He's such a little shit. Oh, man.
So now we are to Joffrey Baratheon.
And, Joffrey Baratheon.
For being the most powerful dude on the continent.
He's horrible.
In one way of saying it. I guess if it came down to it, his grandpa, Tywin, he probably is more powerful. But
sure.
But he's the king. And he's just...
He's loving it.
Cool.
He's definitely that little boy that, you know, picks the wings off the fly. He's just a piece of shit.
Yeah,
really.
Or the little boy who beats prostitutes, but, you know.
Or that. I mean, yeah. Forces them to beat each other while he watches.
Right, right. It's like, okay. Is there, like, any redeeming quality? Is there anything about him that's likable, or is he just that caricature of a, you know, this is the guy
sociopath
that everybody hates. There's nobody who can like this guy.
I don't see anything redeemable about him. I mean, he's a child. I mean, a lot of these characters are children, really. So, and they're in these really extreme circumstances. But I think that Joffrey's he's just kind of a hateful kid. I don't know if that's in part because his mother is such a hateful bitch and raised him that way.
And now she's resenting it, actually. You can tell that she's losing control of him, and he's even going against her. And it's pretty bad.
She created a monster, for sure.
Pretty bad.
She does have that line where she does wonder... In the last season, she's speculating about whether or not it's a result of the incest.
Oh, if that's what fucked him up, huh?
And he's a little touched, perhaps.
Which is another reason he's not supposed to be king for real, right? The incest stuff is on the down low. Nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
And,
he's actually not supposed to. He shouldn't be king at all. He's not a Baratheon at all.
Oh, that's right.
Right. Well, so
anyway, okay. So moving on. Theon Greyjoy.
That's another fun guy.
Remind me.
So Theon Greyjoy, he was a ward of the Starks. So he's...
Oh, yeah. He's a weird-looking dude.
He's kind of a weird-looking guy. He's from Pike, which is kind of these rough islands off the coast of Westeros, where there's sort of this Viking pirate culture there. Mm-hmm. So his father, Balon Greyjoy, rebelled against the Starks. Mm-hmm. In a previous time, and so and were defeated by Ned Stark, and so Ned Stark took Theon as a hostage, basically. Oh, they called them wards in those times. Sure. They would send kids to each other, you know, to ensure loyalty. Right. Like, you can't, don't rebel against me again because I'm raising your child.
Yeah.
So Theon has this weird identity issue with it because the Starks were, of course, nice people. Ned Stark is such an honorable guy. Mm-hmm. You know, so he grows up his whole life, everyone being like, you're so lucky. Ned Stark's great to you. He's like a father to you. But Theon knows he's not really a Stark.
And then he goes back and his dad wants nothing to do with him, it seems like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, they've made you one of them. You're not Ironborn. I've raised your sister to be my heir in your place, basically.
Yeah.
So Theon doesn't take too kindly to that.
But he, and so he goes off and he actually goes and he takes whatever that
is. Winterfell.
Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. To prove himself.
But by the end, it turns out to have been a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very bad idea. And he, like, kills kids. And, you know, maybe I should take back, because the thing with Joffrey is that, like, he's just sick and twisted and bad all the way around, and there's nothing, you know, and he's just a teenager, and I don't know. But with Theon, it's like in some ways worse because he's conflicted, and he's actually you see a conversion from good to bad in terms of like killing his old friends, and as a result, he's still in the end, he doesn't get any respect from the people he's supposedly leading, because doesn't, like, people who were traveling with him end up just, like, knocking him out and taking him back because they're like, oh, we're sick of him.
Yes. So Rob gets wind of what Theon has done and sent a group of people
and
to,
like,
retake it.
You have got to be shitting me.
Yeah. Really, Theon? Really? And so, and the the rest of the guys from Pike are not, there's like 10 of them. They're like, no, we're not going to fight. No. Like, they let him have a speech and then they knock him out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Poor guy.
So Theon,
really,
maybe sort of a tragic character.
Well, he put it on himself, definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. So I know who Theon is. Bronn.
Bronn. Okay. So Bronn is Tyrion's sellsword that he met on the way to the Vale.
Oh, he's like his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I kind of like that dude.
Yeah,
actually.
I like Bronn. I like their friendship. He's just kind of, you know, he's your basic sellsword.
And he's basically a ninja, too.
Basically a ninja. Yeah, he's like he's muscle for hire is what he is. So he's going to hang out with Tyrion. But he also seems to enjoy Tyrion. Like, they've got kind of a rapport.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Bronn, okay. Sandor Clegane?
Yes. So yes, so there are two Cleganes. There's Gregor and Sandor. Uh-huh. Sandor is
the Hound.
The Hound. We know him as the Hound. So he's Joffrey's muscle for hire, basically. The guy with the burned face.
Oh yeah.
Who has this special interest in Sansa for whatever reason. But she finds him very terrifying, but he's frequently found protecting her.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Like when shit went down in the square.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He saved her from being raped.
All right.
Right.
But he's a very, he's burned, his elder brother put his face in the fire when he was a child. So he's afraid of fire. So that's why he hightails it out of the Battle of the Blackwater with all the fire.
Oh.
That's why. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's why his face is all burned.
Got it. Okay. Varys?
Varys. So that's the eunuch. He's the bald eunuch who's on the small council.
Mm-hmm. And he's... A lot of those people who are in the court there, they're just survivors. That's what they are. They know not to throw their weight too much to one person, so they can always be there for the next person who's in power. He's good at that. Okay. Varys. Samwell Tarly.
So that's John's friend at the Wall. I think that's a shout out to Samwise Gamgee.
Samwise.
Yeah, they're like similar characters.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, he's John's friend, the one who, he's a lord, and he's gets beat up by the guys on his first day.
Because he's kind of dorky.
Mm-hmm.
And
not a fighter.
Definitely a magnet for bullies.
Yes.
Brienne of Tarth.
Brienne of Tarth. Okay, so she's Brienne the Beauty, sometimes called by her peers. Unkindly.
Ah, she's that giant.
Because she's a giant. Yeah, she's a giant lady who wants to be a knight. She was originally in the service of Renly Baratheon, who was killed this season. So Do you remember Renly?
No, I'm
So when
it's been a year too. So.
Right, that's true. So when Robert dies, there's, you know, Joffrey is named heir to the throne, but then mm-hmm. there are all these. So Rob starts to call himself king in the north, and then there was this division because Robert had two brothers.
Yes.
Stannis Baratheon and Renly Baratheon.
Oh, is that who those people were?
Yeah, those are Robert's okay. brothers. So they say, so his they're brothers. Going off this rumor that's now going around that exactly. Joffrey is not actually a Baratheon. He's a Lannister because he's born of incest. So they both say they have a claim to the throne. Mm-hmm. Stannis is the elder, so technically the throne should really go to him. Mm-hmm. But Renly's the younger, and he declares as well. So and, those guys are brothers.
And Brienne defends which one?
Renly, the younger guy with the beard.
Okay, but he dies.
Mm-hmm. He does die. He's the one that
was
dies
the
by
the gay one.
He's the gay one. Okay. Yes. They leave out this funny detail from the books. Maybe HBO thought it was too much. But like, so kings of Westeros, they have their Kingsguard and they have white cloaks. Uh-huh. Renly's Kingsguard has rainbow cloaks.
Oh. A little bit much, huh?
Maybe they thought it was a little on the nose for TV.
Well.
But so Brienne becomes part of Renly's rainbow guard.
Got
it. Because she loves him.
Okay, so that's Brienne of Tarth. Mm-hmm. Jeor Mormont?
Jorah Mormont? Jor. Or is it Jeor?
Mine says J-E-O-R. It's Wikipedia for what it's worth.
You know, sometimes with fantasy stuff, do you ever do that when you're reading a book? You just kind of make something up the first time and then yes. you just keep it the whole time?
Yep. Especially when it's a word you're not used to.
Yeah. So, yes. This is the guy. He's a Lord Commander at the Wall. So he's Jorah Mormont, who is Khaleesi's bodyguard's father. So he's commanding at the Wall.
Okay. And he's, in the north. He's the one who's all about the rules and you've given up. You can't go back and that sort of stuff.
Oh, well, that was... Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. A couple of people have to tell Jon Snow that at different times.
That's true.
So there's the commander, but then there's the maester. Did you talk about the monk type guy or the commander?
The commander, the one who looks like he'd be the dad, has like a beard and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
But now that you mention that, they're blurring together for me. So what do I know?
We'll get to them maybe.
Stannis Baratheon. Now he's still alive?
Still alive at the end of season two, yes.
And he's the one with that sort of witch.
Yes, he's taken lover. A yes, she's his witch, yeah, lover, witch.
Now, one mm-hmm. of the things mm-hmm. by and large there's not a whole lot of magic in this world,
right?
But mm-hmm. we see a little bit with mm-hmm. her.
Yes, so she's a foreigner. She's from Ashai beyond the shadow, which is on the other side of the world.
Okay.
And she's brought with her to Westeros a new religion, which is a monotheistic religion, as opposed to the seven. Well, so in Westeros, there are two religions because you often hear people say the old gods and the new.
Yeah, that's right.
So they have the old gods, which they still worship in the north, which live in trees. That's the Starks believe in. But then there's also the new gods, which are the seven, which is one god with seven aspects. Hmm. And it's what is it? The warrior, the maiden, the father. Oh, it's like the mother, the father, the warrior, the crone, the maiden, and the stranger. I think that's it. But it's basically, it's like a, you know, it's okay. a polytheistic religion.
Sure.
Melisandre... She thinks that Stannis is like the savior in her religion. So that's why she has sworn allegiance to him. She thinks that he's been prophesied to be the king. And also to, yes, uh-huh.
Really?
I know, he's so
why
not,
does she think that with his receding
he's
hairline?
He's like not very kingly. You know, he's
seems meant to be second best.
Yeah, he's very... He's no. not full of very full of life or joy. Like his men don't really seem to love him.
Yeah,
he's a severe man.
But he's still kicking.
He is still kicking. He's in it.
Melisandre?
So that's his, that's the red, the red lady.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A priestess of
the priestess Rhaelor. Of. Yes.
And she's the one who had the magical baby mm-hmm. killer that was a one-time spell that made no sense. Uh-huh. It was like the anomaly of the whole second mm-hmm. season. It's like random spirit killer that kills the other dude and then disappears and we're like, yeah. And then the
there's
magic's
very
done
little magic
for like the
in
next
Westeros.
Five episodes. We're
most
like,
Westeros people sort of don't believe in magic. So. You know, they laugh when, like, the men at the Wall say, like, no, we're protecting you from, you know, there's like old dark magic in the north beyond the Wall. But people sort of laugh at it.
But it can still kill gay pretenders to the throne.
It can.
Okay. All right. Davos Seaworth.
So he's Stannis's, he's Stannis's Hand of the King.
He's the Onion Knight?
The Onion Knight. He used to be a smuggler, but Stannis raised him to be the Hand of the King.
Okay. Is he doing a whole lot?
He
say that, and I'm trying to think.
Who is that dude?
Yeah.
He was like, he was leading the, he was commanding the ships into the Battle of the Blackwater. So oh, we probably saw okay. him yeah. Get engulfed right. by green fire.
All right. Yeah, I think we saw him for the last time. I thought there was a scene where his
yes,
ship
I believe I believe his ship exploded.
But all I know is that on this little Wikipedia okay. list says he's in seasons 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. I will. I shan't spoil anything.
Oh, juicy. Okay. Shay.
Shay. That's right. Tyrion's current whore.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we like Shay.
Oh, yeah, we all love her.
The whore with the heart of gold.
The whore with the heart of gold. All right. She likes him even though he's got a, this, like, slash across his face now.
Yeah, and she... Yeah.
Which looks fine.
Did they do it on purpose, too? that, like, he's a dwarf and she's, like, an elongated woman? Like, it just seems like...
Is she tall?
Maybe. Maybe it's just that she's thin. I don't know. Maybe I'm making up the contrast, but... whatever. Not important.
Yeah, maybe she just looks tall next okay. to him.
Ygritte?
Ygritte, that's the wildling woman that Jon Snow can't bring himself to murder.
Oh, yeah.
And so she takes him hostage. So at the very end of season 2, he is
and
with
she's in Downton Abbey, too.
She is in Downton Abbey, too.
Yeah,
she's charming.
Marjorie Tyrell?
Yeah, so she was the one, she was married to Renly, the gay pretender, oh, yeah. the gay Baratheon.
But she was cool with it.
She was cool with it. Queen. She just wants to be
she's
the queen.
She's got that like temptress yeah, sort of like, right. I will have you sort of look. Like she can just consume any yeah. man she wants. I don't know.
Totally. Well, and so she, so the Tyrells are a very powerful family in Westeros. They were allied with Renly Baratheon, but then when Renly's murdered by the demon magic baby,
exactly.
they switch allegiances and join up with the Lannisters because Margaery wants to be the queen. So now she's engaged to Joffrey.
Yeah. I like didn't even realize how many characters there were. Now that we're actually talking about them each individually, I'm like, wow, this is not Seinfeld or Friends where there's like four. Logan, you watch way more TV than I do, though, so maybe this is just like old hat. I don't know.
Well, it's up there. The other one that comes to mind that would even come close is The Wire.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Just all the different corners of Baltimore and all the different people you have to keep straight. That's pretty involved, too. But yeah, this is certainly one of the very most. I agree with that.
Okay. Whew. Are we out of characters? Did we cover them all or not? Not quite.
Did we? You said you were confused about who a redhead was. Were you talking about the witch lady?
Yeah, the witch lady.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just talked about Marjorie Tyrell.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working her way up. Eddard Stark. But he's Ned. He's dead.
That's Ned.
Oh,
that's,
all these other people are just in season
that's
one.
Ned dead.
Like
dead
our Ned. Viserys, our Robert Baratheon, and Khal Drogo. Ah,
Khal Drogo. I know. Her son and her stars.
Mm. So we could go to all the supporting characters, but I think that's a good place to start. Okay.
Wait,
awesome.
wait. I have one more question. There's that one city with tons of characters in it that Khaleesi ends up having to like burn her way out of. What's the deal mm-hmm. with that? Is there like a 30-second explanation for why that's relevant?
For Karth? For why the city's relevant itself?
Yeah, or just the there's lots of characters introduced, the plot point of mm-hmm. why they went through there and who those people were and if we're going to need to worry about them or see them again later if we're done
those
with
people?
Them. Yeah.
Well, so across the Narrow Sea, so Westeros is sort of, you know, in this like feudal system sort of still. Across the Narrow Sea, there are a lot of free, they call them free cities that are a little more,
progressive.
Yeah. They don't have, you know, a monarchy anymore or so they have, elected officials and Karth is one of those. They have a tribunal of 13 that rules over them. So that was who we saw there. One of them, was Zarin. Oh, how do you say his name? Is a crazy name. The one who tried to marry the Khaleesi.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a merchant guy, and then there's like a warlock type of fellow. So I think that was sort of just, that just represents another culture that's outside of Westeros.
Are they going to be big in this next season?
They're going to be, yes, let's remember Karth.
Okay, because like half of them died also. I mean, their council of 12 or whatever mm-hmm. mostly got murdered, and there was the one crazy skinny ghostly looking guy.
Yeah, he's like he's a warlock. There will be repercussions for Daenerys's actions.
Even though it was like self-defense, really. But I guess that doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bob, why do you like Game of Thrones?
Oh, I like it because it's different. The same reason I gave for it not being maybe as accessible to some people is why it's accessible to me. I like that it's adult, but it's fantasy at the same time. High production value, lots of characters, almost too many for me though. But overall, it's just a lot of fun. It's sheer entertainment.
Yeah. You, Shannon, why do you like it?
The same. It's fun. I like fantasy. The scope is huge, and it's just fun. Like, I just like to nerd out about shit. Like, I love to just like know the names of stuff, and like I think that's why people who like fantasy, that's why they like it. It plays into this like
this whole universe you can be a part of,
yeah, that you can know about, and it's like the collector thing, you know. It's like people who like to catalog lots of details about things will like Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And so for me, nothing we haven't really said yet. Like, I sort of like that it's fantasy, but magic isn't a huge part of things. I like that they're willing to kill off important people, which always keeps you on your toes. The other thing I like is the heavy emphasis on talking and negotiating and pulling strings behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Seems like that's probably there in other fantasy, but that's like the main thing that this is about.
Yeah, it's very political. It's very political. It's very realistic in that way. It's less about the battles and more about the who's really in control.
Yeah, although I'm ready for some more epic battles, because both season one and season two kind of had, you know, they did the blue balls effect sort of thing for TV shows, where the whole show is based on these epic battles, and half the time you just see them after they're already done and you don't actually see it, or you see like one battle scene in one episode towards the end and that's it, and it's a lot of build up and then it's over. I don't know if season three is gonna like kind of bring in the battles or not, you know, in terms of being front and center, because I'm ready for that. I mean, I like the political stuff, but I think they could dial it back a little.
Oh really? I was just saying that's one of my favorite things about it. I think that's what makes this and I would enjoy seeing big battles, but that's got to be super expensive. Well, and on the other hand, I like that we don't really lose out of the story by not seeing them. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing them, but I think it's cool about the story that that we can not see them and still it makes sense.
Well, if it's any indication about the battles, the third book in the series is called A Storm of Swords, so.
Whoa. It's going to be like the most expensive one yet.
Yeah, sure. So, Shannon, let me ask you, what are you looking forward to most in season three?
Without being too spoilery.
Yeah. Medium spoilery.
Just more of, let's see, so based on the show, I'm excited to see just where all the characters are going. Like, I think it ended in a good place. It actually did kind of dip into the third book a little bit, but I thought it ended in a good place where people are sort of poised for a big change. Like, Arya has just escaped with her pals. I like to follow Arya Stark. Daenerys Targaryen is my favorite, so I like to see her with her. Now she has her dragons. She's got a little bit of a direction again, because she was sort of wandery. A little bit.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, and I hear, you can elaborate, I'm sure, the third book is a lot of people's favorites, and the fourth is a lot of people's least favorites, so definitely enjoy this upcoming season.
Well, I'm not sure what they'll do about it. I don't know if you want me to talk about it at all. But
how many books are there?
There are currently, well, so they're still being written.
Okay.
But five so far?
There are currently five that are out. That are currently published.
And so that gives them a couple of years to get the next one out.
Yeah. But they're long. They're really long.
And he's spending some time writing for the TV show.
Yes.
Maybe his time would be better spent writing and finishing the books.
Let's wrap it up, George. Come on now.
Yeah. All right. So I just want to leave a spoiler free or anything for us to...
Spoiler free.
Okay. Spoiler free. There's some big stuff. People did things in season two, and they're going to pay for it in season three. Let's just put it that way.
Karma's a bitch.
Love it.
Cool. Well, that was actually really helpful. I'm glad we did that. Thanks for helping us with that, Shannon.
Of course.
Now, last week, we were not able to get to our mini obsessions because of time. We probably are running along again this time, but I can't go 2 weeks in a row without mini obsessions. So I'll go first. Now, I've talked in recent weeks a little bit about this biohacking idea, did the bulletproof coffee and did this slow carb diet, the 4-hour body with Tim Ferriss. This week I've been trying another biohack, and this is polyphasic sleep, where supposedly you train your body to only be in REM sleep when it's asleep, so I only need 2 hours of sleep a day. And yeah, I'm in the middle of that. It supposedly takes a while to get used to it, at least a week, maybe more. I've been doing it for almost a week now. I gotta say, I'm pretty tired still, but not as tired as I would think for the fact that I've only been getting 2 hours of sleep a day. But yeah, you know, getting a lot of extra time in the day would be awesome. Also, they say you feel even more rested than usual if you can get it down, which mm-hmm. is something I need because I've always had big problems with sleep. Wow. And so that's the main reason I want it, because it supposedly helps you feel more rested and sleep even better. But I'm right in the hard part. I spend most of my nights like, oh, I can have a 2-minute or 20-minute nap in 4 hours. I'll just try to prop my eyelids open with toothpicks or something. And it kind of sucks, but hopefully it's all worth it. I'll let you know. That's my obsession.
I admire your willpower.
Yeah. Thanks. Shannon, do you have a mini obsession this week?
Very mini. It's still wintry here.
Yeah.
very sadly. So recently I have been zipping myself up in a gift from my mother from a couple Christmases back called a softie.
Softie.
Aw, sounds so cute.
Yeah, it is cute. It's sort of like it's like a Snuggie, except it's more akin to like a sleeping bag.
Oh, okay.
And you just get like super, like, super warm in it.
Like caterpillar around the house in it.
Yeah, just caterpillar around.
Wasn't there a show that made fun of that? That is like combining a Snuggie and a ShamWow. So you just like, you can polish your floor while you're snuggled up.
I think Bill Maher might have made fun of
that. Oh, is that who it was? Okay.
That's awesome.
Awesome. And hopefully you can put that away soon.
I hope I can.
But not yet.
How
about you, Bob? Lay on us your mini obsession.
My mini obsession is bacon and eggs.
Nice. So good, right?
Straight up, I love bacon and eggs, and I had it
nothing
a lot
can
this
beat
week.
It.
Yeah. I put in, you know, I put my own little spin on it with some Gouda cheese and Tabasco sauce mixed into the eggs for good measure. And
is that scrambled eggs, sounds like?
Yeah, scrambled eggs with my Gouda and Tabasco, and have it with some bacon. And it's a nice, you know, high protein, moderate fat diet in terms of that helping my overall diet, where I'm trying not to eat as many carbohydrates. And so I love it.
Aren't we all? Awesome. And any diet where you can eat bacon and eggs has something going for it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. Solid. Solid there, Bob. All right. Well, that is today's Practically Ideal. Find us at practicallyideal.com and on iTunes and on Facebook and now on Stitcher Radio. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Logan Bo. Bob is at Bob Caswell. And Shannon is at Shan Meow, like a cat would say.
Like a cat would say.
Tweet us or leave a comment about this episode or about anything else. Thanks for rocking with us.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Feel up.